last Thursday. No, last Thursday. What's today? Thursday? Last Sunday. And someone asked a question about holding on to the eye. And I said, imagine the eye is like a rope. And you're holding on to the eye. And you're going down the rope to the source of the rope. You're finding the source of the eye. And when you get to the end, you let go. And someone mentioned, well, I experienced that. I entered the void, and I feel wonderful. Is that right? And I said, no, it's wrong. I didn't elaborate. A few people called me and asked me, why did I say that's wrong? Don't we want to attain the void or emptiness or nirvana or absolute reality? We really don't want to attain anything. We just want to let go of the other things that tell us there's something to attain. And as long as you say, I have experienced the void, that's laughable. Because when you experience the void, the eye is merged. And there's nothing to experience. You find? As long as you say, I experienced this, or I am experiencing bliss, or I feel so happy, then you're not. Because I is left. I has to go. Who can experience bliss? There's nobody left to experience bliss. There's no one left to experience anything. It becomes ineffable. Beyond explanation. And then they asked me another question and I didn't answer properly. So they said, well, what happens then? And I said, you become more human. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean your quality about you, your radiant quality, your radiance, expands. And you become omnipresent. You become the universe. You realize the universe is an emanation of yourself, is a projection of yourself. That's what I mean by becoming more human. You become lovable. Joyous, compassionate. You develop all the Advaita qualities by themselves. So your humanhood becomes selfless. You no longer think about I and me and mine. As a matter of fact, you hardly think. You just become. And of course, there's nothing to become. You just remain yourself. The self that you truly are. You are that self. And there's nothing else. Now, people always want tools to work with. And we always go back to the relative plane because of that. When I give you tools to work with, we have to go down to the relative plane. Because reality has no tools. Reality has no process. In reality, you do not have to meditate. You do not have to pray. You do not have to do mantras. Reality is reality. Can you imagine God praying? To whom shall he pray? To himself? Can you imagine what you call God meditating? To whom shall he meditate? Therefore, when you do all these rituals, it's your so-called humanhood, which really doesn't exist, that is doing the rituals. And you're doing the rituals to discover that you don't exist. Now, I have given the class 3 Maya mantras, 4 principles, and 3 vehicles. If you're practicing that, that's all you need, because that's enough to take care of you between lifetimes. I want to share something else with you, but first, do you remember the 4 principles? Who remembers them? I'm looking at you people, you all know people. Except for Sam and Hurry.
I'm not here.
The first one is everything is a projection of the mind. The second is
there's no world. Existence of the I, no prevailing, not born.
Oh, I was never born, I don't exist, and I'll never die. I mean, that's the principle that says that. The third is...
You don't exist, and what are you doing?
I know.
That's just me.
And the third one is there is no self in anything or anybody.
There's no ego, no cause.
And the fourth one is...
We stick to the third world war. It means that nothing has a cause. Nothing has a cause in this world. Nothing ever came into existence. Nothing appears the way it appears. It's an optical illusion. Nothing has an ego. There's no ego. There's no basis for existence. What's the fourth one?
The fourth one, in order to know the noble truth, you have to discard the untruth.
Yes. Instead of looking for self-realization, deny that what isn't self-realization. In other words, you look at the Bible and you say, not this. You look at the Iraq war, you say, not this. You look at President Bush, you say, not this. And you go on like that. You look at your own body, your own experiences, not this. And when you deny everything, whatever is left is yourself. So we go in reverse. We're not trying to become self-realized. We're trying to remove the clouds that tell us we're not. And then we'll shine through again. That's good. Now about the 3 vehicles that you cross the ocean of samsara.
The first one is a log.
The what?
A log.
A log. What do you mean,
a be alone. The desire to be alone for practice.
Where's the log come from?
A log is lonely. No, I just said that. So I wanted a Sanskrit term that you never gave me for it.
What's that?
I don't know.
Aloneness.
Yeah, what would you
call it? What do you want the Sanskrit term for?
Well, at first I wanted to understand it better, and I thought that was the best way, but really.
You speak English.
Well,
English.
More impressive than Sanskrit.
No,
it has a better ring to it.
It sounds like it's realer.
No, it's much more than that. Yeah. How do you describe sadhu sangha or satsang?
I didn't describe it by silence.
Yeah, but how do you describe it to those who want to have something to grasp onto?
In simple English language.
So, satsang?
Sure.
What is satsang?
Being in the sat. Right. Being in reality.
Right. And then, I guess, further to explain all the different things.
No, actually, if we don't have to talk Sanskrit, we shouldn't. We should speak languages that we know, like Russian.
Russian. And worry. Russian and worry and anxiety in that country.
Okay, so the first vehicle is an intensive desire, an intense desire to be alone most of the time. Not because you want to be lonely, but because you can connect when you're by yourself. You can work on yourself more. You should be happy when you're alone. You can see into yourself. You have more of an opportunity to connect with the infinite when you're by yourself rather than when you're with people. And therefore, a person on a spiritual path like this especially hungers for a time where they can be alone and really dive deep within themselves. And what's the second one?
Well, you know, the first one, I just thought of something. The first one I want to express it and see what you think is for the person who's alone a lot, who does practice and whatnot, is alone a lot. Another way maybe to look at it is that on a relative level, you're alone in the world. I'm talking relative. When you're with people, you're alone on a relative level. So you're not going to be picking up or be concerned with their attitudes towards you, etc. Or affected by this and that. And, of course, on an absolute level, we're not different than everyone else. We're all one. But on a relative level, aloneness is also with people.
Well, that's okay. But actually, when it comes to practice, most people are disturbed by other people. And when they're by themselves, they can get more out of it.
So that first vehicle is a conditional vehicle?
Not really. But it's true of most people.
Alright, so second vehicle would be satsang?
Yes. The second vehicle is a intense desire to be at satsang, to come to meetings like this. A deep feeling to want this rather than to go to the movies or bowling or go drive your car off a cliff or whatever else you can do. You have a strong desire to come to a class like this. That shows that something is opening in your heart. Before I actually think, what is it you like to do best? Watch TV? Read comic books? Go to movies? Spend time with your friends, your worthless friends? What do you really like to do? Be honest with yourself. If you'd rather come to Sefzad like this, then your heart is opening up. And it's great. But don't force yourself. And don't fool yourself. Rather, when you're alone, work on yourself. And the feelings will come by themselves. And this is everyone.
Company of your peers or sadhana.
To want to be in the company of a sage or with your co-spiritual people. In other words, if you have friends, you want them to be on some kind of spiritual path also, so they can help you and you can help them. There's no sense associating with the person that takes you to porno movies. Unless that helps you get enlightened, I mean. But usually you want to be with people that are like yourself. You know, you're strong. Somebody actually told me that. Somebody really told me one time. They're going to see porno movies because they get enlightened and get their heart opens up.
I like to talk to that person.
So what's the fourth?
The fourth one should probably be an amendment to the third. Is what if you're too strongly attached to sadhu?
There's no fourth one.
Well, so then the question arises: is what if one gets too attached to sadhu? To have sadhu sangha or particular sadhus or teachers one has?
That's up to the teacher to take care of.
Really?
Sure. To make you become unattached. See how the dog is attached? He never comes to me, honestly.
Of course, to everyone else.
Do you feel him?
Do you love that dog as much as you love the other dogs? Do you love that dog as much as you love the other dogs?
More.
Well,
he's number one.
So I'm now going to share the three essential questions with you. And again, this is also something you can work with, very important, I think. The first question you pose when you first open your eyes in the morning, when you first get out of bed, as soon as you get up. The second question you pose at about noontime. And the third question you pose before you go to sleep. If you work in these things, you're going to see fast results. The first question you pose to yourself is, where did I come from? And remember, when you do this as soon as you open your eyes in the morning, before you can think of anything else. And even if your mind starts thinking, ask the question three times. To yourself, where did I come from? Where did I come from? Where did I come from? And you ask yourself, what do I mean by that? Where did I come from? Am I referring to my body? I just said, am I referring? So I must mean, where did the I come from? Where did the I come from? Not my body, but the I that appears to be my body. Where did the I come from? And you ponder, you wait, then you repeat it again, where did the I come from? I know I just slept, I dreamt, and now I'm awake. And notice they say I all the time. I slept, I awake, I dreamt. Now, where did this I come from? Where did the I come from? I is the first pronoun. And everything I say seems to be I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel sick, I feel well. It's always I. What does this mean? Well, I notice that everything is attached to I. In other words, I can't see anything unless I put I first. I want to become realized. I am not realized. I need a teacher. I don't need a teacher. And so forth. You start to feel that the whole universe is attached to I, everything. So you say to yourself something like this. This means that if I find the source of I, all my problems, my faults, my karma, my samskaras, everything will disappear because they're all attached to I. Then you can say, I, like a mantra. I. And you're realizing all the time that you're going deeper and deeper in the I. Again, it's like holding onto a rope, and you're going down the rope to the source. I. Never mentally come to the end of the rope. The end should come by itself, or the source. In other words, don't say I've come to the source. For as I explained before, you wouldn't be able to say I came to the source if you came to the source. Because the I would be gone. Everything is attached to the I. And you simply go deeper and deeper and deeper, saying to yourself, I. Keep this up until you feel that you don't want to keep it up any longer. Then get dressed and go about your business and forget about it. But do not come to any conclusion. That's the worst thing you can do. The conclusion comes by itself. You just do the practice. Any questions about that so far? Okay, not about 12 noon. Doesn't have to be exactly a 12 noon. Don't synchronize your watch. But around that time, when you're sort of involved in the world, you can be working, you can be washing dishes or putting pans. You can be watching a movie, you can be doing anything you like. But remember to do this. You ask yourself, where did the universe come from? Where did the universe come from? And you begin to ponder that. The planets, the galaxies, the stars, the earth, worms, animals, birds, grass, trees. Where did it all come from? Who sees it? I see it. Went back to I again. When I sleep, what happens in the universe? It seems to have disappeared. And yet I still exist. But when I woke up, there was the world again. So it seems that I am experiencing the world. I am experiencing the universe. Went back to I. What this means to me is the universe is a projection, a manifestation of my mind. For when I close my eyes, it disappears. I must be projecting the universe. Therefore, again, if I get rid of the I, the universe will go too. For the universe only exists because I exist. Do you follow that? Again, you begin to ponder I. You say to yourself, I. The reason you're saying that is due to the fact that when you keep repeating I, you begin to condense the whole universe, including your body. It begins to disappear until only I is left. It's like when you're making a fire, you throw all the twigs in the fire, the leaves in the fire, wood in the fire. Everything goes in the fire. But you have a stick with which you stir the fire. But in the end, the sticks are going to the fire also. The stick represents the I. So everything is a projection of your mind attached to your I. You say, my mind. I has a mind. I is attached to the mind. If I get rid of the I, the mind goes with it. And there will be no mind. Nothing with which to think and drive you crazy. So again, you begin to practice I. For as long as you can, do not come to any conclusion. The conclusion will come on its own accord. Now you come to the evening, just before you go to sleep. Again, you do not have to sit in meditation postures for this. You can lie down, you can sit anywhere, you can walk, you can stand, you can do whatever you like. You ask yourself the question, where did God come from? We're all hung up in God. And some of us here think it's blasphemous to talk about God this way. Yet you have to inquire, where did God come from? Then you begin to realize, when I was little, I was indoctrinated in God and the religion, Catholicism, Protestantism, Judaism, Islam, whatever. But have I ever had an experience of God myself? How do I know that's true? Where did this God come from? So God must be a preconceived idea. God must be a concept of mind. You say to yourself, even now while I discuss this with myself, I have a fear that comes inside because of blasphemy. I have been told that God is real. And therefore it becomes blasphemous when I speak of God this way. But I want to know, where did God come from? And then you begin to ponder again. God comes from my mind. God is an idea, a concept, of which I don't understand. And then you say, I believe in God. I think of God. It is my concept. So again, you get back to that again. To I. And you realize that God is also attached to I. Can you imagine that? God is attached to I. Think about this. If you weren't aware of your sense of I, you wouldn't believe in anything. For you have to say, I believe in God. I believe in Allah. I believe in Jehovah. I, it's always I. If there's no I, who is there to believe? So we get back to I again. And you have to again follow the I thread to its culmination. The idea now is to realize and know that God is attached to I. You don't try to get rid of God. You transcend the I, and God goes with it. So you say, I, the same thing. I. and God will begin to disappear, because I will disappear. And when all these things disappear, what will be left? Absolute reality. Pure intelligence. Total awareness. Ultimate oneness. And you will be free. So those are the three essential questions. If you practice these things, you will see fast results. Any questions?
Regarding number two, let's say Ramana was sleeping. And someone put his foot in a hornet's nest. Do you think he would wake up?
No. If you're speaking of Ramana, he had these experiences when he was a boy, where when he went to sleep, he couldn't wake up. And his friends used to pick him up and take him out of his bed and put him on the hill and beat him up. And he didn't feel a thing. And then when he woke up, he would laugh. So he had a problem waking up.
Is it a problem to wake up for the jhani? For the jhani?
Well, it's not a problem. What it is there's no difference between waking and sleeping and death and birth. It's all the same. A jhani is awake during sleep. The material world is asleep. So the only what functions in the world is a dream. But he's always awake at the same time. So he wouldn't have any problem with that.
What determines whether Gyani would be, according to someone else's viewpoint, would be awake or sleeping? Is it just the karma that would...
Well, something else's viewpoint is according to their own karma. You see, the average person sees what your karma lets you see. That's when it comes to conclusions. You say, this is right and this is wrong, this is good and this is bad, this is such and this is such. It all has to do with karma. When there's no karma, there's only one vision. And that's the self, omnipresence. Everything becomes the self. Everything becomes the yoni. The yoni is omnipresence and self.
What do you mean by omnipresent?
I mean everywhere present at the same time.
In all circumstances?
Under all circumstances.
Universally?
Universally. The yoni is consciousness itself. And consciousness is everywhere. It's undivided. It's self-contained. So the yoni is aware that he is consciousness. Self-contained. And everything is the self. And I am that. I am is not name for consciousness.
That all forms of beings, entities, have dissolved.
It's all consciousness.
No separate forms.
There are no separate forms, but then again, it's like the yoni is a mirror, and the images in the mirror of all the people in the world and the universe. Only the yoni is aware he's the mirror, and everything that shines through him are images. So he's in the images and also in the mirror. But if you try to grab the images, you grab the mirror. Because there are no images. The images don't really exist. Dhyani is therefore aware of this all the time. Whether asleep or awake or whatever.
They're just phantom appearances?
Phantom appearances, in a way. They're just images. They come out of the Dhyani himself, or out of consciousness. Nothing is located anywhere. That's true. Nothing exists. Even the images do not exist. Only pure consciousness exists.
Could you say, Dhyani, that you're really only talking about pure consciousness?
Yes.
Not at any point where that would be elevated.
Exactly. But for the sake of explanation, we talk about images. As an example, all of you are looking at me. And if I ask each one, what do you see, I get 12 different answers or whatever. Because you're telling me about yourself. You can only see yourself wherever you look. That's all you see.
When there's no reference to time or space at all.
Time and space does not exist.
Okay.
They appear to exist. There's only one. It's all condensed. But in the dream, there appears to be multiples. The one appears to have split into many. But that's a dream. So I talk about it.
So even if I don't know, whatever I see is only seeing myself. Even if I don't know about it, whatever I see is only seeing myself.
Seeing yourself. Yes.
You'd have to have a preconceived idea that the seer was different in order to see it any other way.
That's from Parapta Karma. You've accumulated only some scars. So the Ayani sees all that when he walks through the world.
That gives you the sense of seer is different from what's seen.
Yes.
Because you're carrying that around with you.
Exactly.
Is that that second principle you're talking about then, that you really are everything, that you really are the world as it manifests?
You mean the third principle?
It wasn't the second, I can't remember the first two. When you said those,
I have taken on the world. Therefore, don't try to change the world. Change the I. Transcend the I, the world will go. Because the world is attached to the I.
See, the seer is different from the seen. That's at one level. But at another level, there is no seer, so it's not different from the seer.
And there's no seer. There's only consciousness.
That could apply then to the eye, trying to watch the eye. This is for, if I'm watching the eye, it doesn't become an impersonal thing. There's still an eye doing the watching, and
you have to ask
it has
yourself,
to come together.
You have to ask yourself, who is watching?
The hall of mirrors.
Yes.
It's an object of the eye. You
explained one day, Robert, that there are actually not two eyes. It's just one eye, which is the real eye.
Yes.
The supreme principle. And which he doesn't identify with the body. Sort of beliefs.
The eyes attach to the belief system.
Right. But the eye is only one. There is no two eyes.
There's only one, but in the last analysis, then has to go to.
Right, because it's still conceptual.
Yes.
And in the lowest analysis, there are two eyes.
Yes. See, there was one dog, it was eye, and they turned into multiple.
They multiply.
And as soon as someone gets a gun, there'll be no dogs.
Who would like to get me a glass of water? So how does all this grab you, Sam?
One say that one of the quickest ways to learn
would
just be silence after a period of time.
Oh, yes, that's
one can just sit in silence for.
That's the best way.
Because the concepts go, the ideas go.
But can you sit in silence? That's the question.
Yeah, but I'm saying if somebody did.
That's it. Everything turns into silence.
Everything is. Not even silence is good.
That's for us. Why? No,
okay.
Thank you.
Did one say theoretically that even if one's mind wanders a lot, and one has many thoughts and I make it difficult for them to sit in silence, even if they do that, even if they still sit in silence, after a time, would that not take care of itself?
Everything helps. Only it may take 1,000 years. But when you're saying I, you're coming towards silence. That's all I do. You say I. Where did I come from? I. And you'll notice the space between I becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Until automatically you stop saying I. And then you're in the real silence that you're talking about. But that's how you get there. But it's a little naive to think that the average person could just sit down and be silent. They can't. Because their thoughts are so powerful, it won't let them sit still. That's why I give you the practices. So you'll have a tool to work with. And you can do something.
Isn't there also trouble that people think they're in a thoughtless state and they're really not? And they need something to go beyond that state.
Of course.
To get to the real silence.
That's right.
What about just continuing this, no matter what you're doing, all day long, trying to do this, rather than separate times of the day?
If you can manage, that's great. But in the beginning, you shouldn't be a fanatic. You should sort of balance everything. And bring it to the same goal. Because from experience working with people, I found that if you take the average person out of the world and you start doing this all of a sudden 24 hours a day, they can go crazy. And that's good. Sometimes.
Or they just give it up and go back into the world.
Yes.
And not try spiritual work again.
You have to balance everything.
been trying to do it for years and years and years, but I find that I haven't been able to, but it's just whenever I can think of it. I keep thinking that I should be able to do it 24 hours a day. And I know it doesn't work.
Well, don't think of that at all. Just be gentle with yourself. Love yourself more than you are. And focus on yourself. When you can. Make it gentle, make it simple. Do not have the feeling I have to do this. It won't happen by itself. Everything will happen by itself if you allow it to.
Other part can't stop.
Then you have to ask yourself the question, who feels like this? So where do these feelings come? And fire them. And you go right back to the eye. And work your way down the eye. Follow the eye thread to the heart. And you become free. Gently. Slowly. Do you know what kind of chair I need, Henry? I need like a softer chair that I can sink into with the arms further apart.
How about cushions?
John just comes in and says, notebook, we're all finished. You open your notebook to write things in the little things.
Oh, you're done? I gotta start at 4. What time is it now?
6.
No, it's 5?
It's 5 o'clock.
5
o'clock.
Yeah.
5 o'clock. Yeah. But we start at 4.
Let's get going.
Should we start all over again?
Yeah.
Play the tape back to him.
Why don't you just come back an hour earlier? Come back here.
You know, if you practice these principles, all these things I gave you and shared with you, you will actually see fast results. It works. But you've got to do it. You've got to make it happen. I can't do it for you. I can lead you to the goal of the mind, but you've got to do it yourself.
Well, they're all three essentially the same. Following the eye to its source.
They're essentially the same as God, the universe,
the
humans.
The self, God, yeah.
The body, yeah. God, and the...
They're all the same. The whole trick is to realize that the whole universe, God, and everything else is attached to your eye. And when you allow the eye to go into the heart, the eye will disappear and pure reality will shine forth.
The heart is the source of the eye.
The heart is the source. Mm-hmm.
Or is the heart located and disappears?
The right
source,
yes. We're not speaking of the physical heart. We're speaking of the spiritual heart. And we're not speaking of chakras. We're speaking of the heart and the right side of your chest. Which is only a point of reference.
Try to find and locate the heart on the right side. I as well who's looking for the heart on the right side.
Yes. You don't try to find it. You just become it. You are the heart. That's you. The heart is the self. It's only called the Heartfelt Point of Reference.
Could it be located right
in the chest? Due to the fact that as a point of reference, spirituality awakens quicker when you focus your attention on that point.
So you should focus your attention
on that point? Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You're sure it's on the right side? It seems to me to be in the center.
Well, if you like the center, then re-enjoy it. But you're all spiritual teachings. The spiritual arms only on the right side. That's right. That's a good point, as a matter of fact. When you say something like, say, who, me? Where do you point? On the right side.
Even if you
let your point to the right side of the chest. Whenever you talk about yourself, you always point to the right side of the chest. You're pointing to your spiritual heart, to yourself. That's your real soul.
Speaking of AIDS, Ramana talked about that psychic food was an aid to spiritual talent.
Well, psychic food automatically comes to you when you're thinking of the I, and you're practicing the yama marga, automatically you will know what to eat. But sattvic food is always the best food, which consists of fruits and vegetables and grains and raw milk. That's always the best. But this is why on this path we did not discuss too much yoga. I was asleep with sleep. Nothing is really necessary except getting rid of the eye. On the path of getting rid of the eye, everything else will come automatically. You will be drawn to the right foods, the right people, to the right influences, to the right action. Everything will take care of itself. When you're focusing on I. Look how happy the dog is. Does the dog think of I? The dog has nothing to think about. The dog just exists. He doesn't know he's a dog. We do.
He's not thinking of I right now?
I'm not going. He just exists.
You don't want anything?
Right? Mm-hmm. But we get so caught up in our thinking, our thoughts, and our emotions. We have no time to become free. The secret, therefore, is to slow the mind down, to keep the mind from thinking. In other words, when your mind starts to think, catch yourself. Every time the mind starts to think, catch yourself. And you can ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? Or you can be the witness to your thoughts. Or you can exchange thoughts for the mantra. And so who am I? and look at the scar tonight. But there all means do something to keep yourself from thinking.
Would that include work thinking? Do the thinking that's necessary to accomplish a task?
Yes. Due to the fact that your body will accomplish the task much better when you don't think. You will know what to do. Your mind will become one-pointed on the task. And you will accomplish the task much better by not thinking about the task. But yet something inside of you will know exactly what to do. But when a person thinks about a task, they think something like this. What if it doesn't work? What if I make a mistake? What if this happens? What if that happens? Whereas if you don't think, something will take over, and the task will become more beautiful for you. When you find yourself in the moment, centered in the moment, where 5 minutes ago does not exist, and 5 minutes from now does not exist. You become centered in the now, then you can do the task correctly.
Is the witness of thoughts another thought?
Yes. It's another thought you've got to get rid of in the end. It's like the stick I was talking about. You make the fire, and you throw it into the fire to burn up. But the stick is the witness. And when everything else burns up, you throw in the stick too.
The stick to use to stir up the fire.
Stir the fire. Everything has to go.
The witness is included.
The witness is included. Because after all, who is the witness? Where did the witness come from?
Just consciousness.
Well, consciousness.
Functioning on its own.
If it were consciousness, there would be no thoughts about witness.
Well, the witness isn't a thought.
Well, somebody's got to think about being a witness.
The one we're talking about
then
is.
Then that isn't witnessing.
Now, who knows that you're witnessing?
No one.
Then you can't
there's
be witnessing.
There's no one to know.
Then there's no more witnessing.
There's just witnessing per se.
The witnessing has to go. Because when there's just witnessing, when you come out of it, you say, I witnessed.
Just witnessing.
Then that's good. Then the witnessing is really the self. If you get to that point, you can call it anything you like. You can call it witnessing, you can call it consciousness. You can call absolute reality, it's all the same. As long as there's no I.
Prior to having any knowledge of this way of thinking, the highest ideal I had was to solve life's problems by living in the imagination. I would absorb the light into whatever I hopefully getting paid for that. No, but the ants and so many people that I know that are in the arts found refuge in imagining this place.
Mm.
Now it seems that living in a life of growing silence growing more and more, what happens if the activity that you're involved in during the day for financial reasons happens to be that imaginary kind of structure, like putting together a story or something like that. Is there any change in the way you're relating to that activity in living a life of growing silence to alter that activity?
Well, look at this one. Your body came to this earth to do a certain work, and nothing can deviate from why it came here. So your body's going to do the work it came here to do. It has nothing to do with you. Therefore, if you're meant to be a great artist or a great actor, you're going to accomplish this. But you will be sound about it. Your sound is your real nature, your true nature. Yet you will perform better than ever before. Everything will be better for you. But you are not the doer. You just got to get rid of the notion, I am the doer. That has to go. It has nothing to do with you. You are not the doer. You are the self. But yet your body's going to do whatever it came here to do. But your body is not you. So don't worry about it. The right thing will happen.
It will manifest as more responsibility in creation.
Yes. Because that's what it's supposed to be. In other words, whatever your body's supposed to do on this earth, it's going to accomplish without your help.
I have problem with this thing about thoughts. Ultimately, thoughts are the manifestation of the self. I don't know if I'm wrong there, but if that's the case, the thoughts are non-dual per se. Duality comes only when there is somebody who believes is the thinker.
Mm-hmm.
So the thoughts per se are like in the case of the Jnani, he has thoughts, but there is nobody to think about. That's the way I see it.
The self is self-contained, and the self really does not manifest thoughts to begin with. Thoughts are an illusion. And like you say, the Jnani does have thoughts, but the thoughts are meaningless. They only go this far in the self. But they do not bring on any more karma. They do not disturb the Jnani at all. They have no value whatsoever to me. The thoughts come very lightly, very slowly. They come and they go, they come and they go. There's no permanent thought. But the thoughts do not come from the self. The self is the self. They appear to come through from the self. Just like the world appears, the body appears, the thoughts appear. Therefore, when you follow the eye, like we said in the beginning, and we realize the thoughts and the body is attached to the eye, when the eye goes, everything else goes. The thoughts go, everything goes. So don't try to really stop your thoughts. Get rid of the eye that thinks the thoughts. You see the difference? Whenever I tell you to stop thinking, I mean catch the eye that thinks. Find the source of the eye that thinks, and the thoughts will stop by the thoughts.
And the difference is between those thoughts which have a claim in it and those thoughts which do not.
Have a claim?
Yeah, thoughts claim that I'm doing something.
You have to realize I am not the doer. And when those thoughts come, ask yourself, to whom do they come? And they disappear. Is that what you mean?
No, because you were talking about the thoughts of the Jnani, that they have different thoughts, and I would take it that those thoughts don't have any claim of doing.
Oh, I see what you mean, right. That's
no.
Right.
And other thoughts have a claim of doing it.
Yes.
So there's a difference between thoughts which have a claim and those which don't.
The Jnani has no attachment to the thoughts which have. Yeah. They mean nothing, they're valueless.
Question I had is also prior to having any knowledge of this, something about myself, but imagine in personal life to pick up a pencil, sketch a still life. And in the moment that he's feeling the relationships between the few objects and still life, fully concentrated on that, and that silence and putting it together, in a certain way I always felt that person was there for a small extended period of time in his life. If you put the pencil down, you fall back into regular consciousness. And the question was, is what you're talking about sort of like doing the still life, except there's no pencil, and all the objects, everything you're relating to, is as if you're relating to still life setting.
That's a good way to say it, yes, that's a good analogy. There's only consciousness, and whatever appears in consciousness is an image.
So it starts getting more and more like a still life.
Like a still life. And when you realize that who you are, you realize that you are the consciousness and not the still life. And the still life becomes an illusion. But it's still there. But you're aware of its non-reality. You realize everything is non-reality, but it exists as an image of yourself, like the images in the mirror. They appear to exist, but you can't do anything with them. Because if you try to grab them, you grab the mirror, not the image. Consciousness is the same way. When you try to grab anything, you find it's illusory. It doesn't exist. Only consciousness exists. So then you ask, what about everything in the room? Do you twist the wheel? That's part of the dream. It's part of the illusion. When you have a dream, you dream that everything exists, the world exists, the universe exists, people exist, and God's welcome. Periods and problems and delusions, but then you wake up and it's gone. Soon you wake up and you laugh, or you realize it's all been a dream, and only the self exists, and you are them.
When you say that the consciousness exists, that's looking at it from a relative point of view, in itself, consciousness doesn't have a feeling of I exist.
Of course, you're right. But to explain it, you have to use some words.
Yeah.
There is no consciousness. There's no existence. There's no self. So let's keep still.
So last we've been talking about karma. We've been talking today, you said, what the body doing has to do. The body has capable of doing something, so it's going to do it. It has to do it, which is karma. It's karma. But you're saying karma is absolute. The word is, for instance, if you have a deep insight to yourself in the moment and you see it, something completely about yourself and it's changed. That changes your karma. That changes your infusion. Also,
as long as the eye exists, karma exists. The only time karma does not exist and won't even change is when you get in front of the notion of eye.
I understand. But also, if you have deep insight, whatever you've seen is erased or gone, that changes the direction that you're going, how the sliding might be.
But somebody has to be there to see. Who sees?
How would something see?
There has to be an object and a subject. Somebody has to see. There's no such thing as the right seeing. For as long as you see, there has to be a subject and an object. When they both merge, then that's consciousness.
Right.
And there's no more seeing. It's just being.
That's what happens after you see something seen from the inside.
There's only vague.
Open.
But your body has nothing to do with that. The appearance of your body is going to go on with what it's supposed to do.
Still, that will change the direction you go and say you go this way, why do you do it this way?
That's possible. Yes.
Also, what about race? Race itself, from a higher being, for instance.
Yes.
Race itself can also change the course of the person.
Race you already have. And you're aware of your race. Things come into the common. Race transcends common.
For people who are not aware of their race, if they experience something, that changes the direction of their life also.
Well, your life is always changing anyway. It shouldn't always do it, it's due to karma. When you get rid of the notion of I, all change stops. You're no longer aware of change. When you believe I exists, then you're aware of change. So don't worry about change. You can see yourself removing the I sense. Then everything will take care of itself. Get rid of the I sense, the sense of I. And everything will take care of itself. It makes life easier. Of course, you don't have to make any changes in yourself.
I understand. You know, the person, of course, in the person's life, many people work on this, urge people come across.
But don't worry about people. Do what you have to do and then take care of yourself. We worry too much about people.
Well, I'm not worried about people. I'm just bringing up this point. People, many people have tried to come to an understanding of themselves and very few people do.
Who knows?
So during the life. During the life they have whatever happens to them. They have to go through whatever comes. And we're talking about the absoluteness of conflict.
Mm. But who's aware of those things? I am. Where do I come from? Get rid of the eye and all that stuff and stuff. Work on the eye.
I don't disagree with that. But I'm just talking about the absoluteness of karma, just disputing.
On the relative plane, the absoluteness of karma is true.
On the relative
plane.
But let's say someone meets a great saint. The saint shows a great blessing. My life has changed.
That's because you prepared yourself to meet the same.
That's, I understand. But yet, that whatever happens there, that's not karma. There's a very great saying in the Mahavishnu word that there's an order to grace the sin. So when you touch a grace, it will really change your person's life.
That's true. That happens. But you have prepared yourself for that.
Some schools of thought believe that that's in your karma to get that
grace. It's not supposed to change that way. Or maybe it was predestined to change that way.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just...
What you're saying is true. But you have prepared yourself for that in one life and another. And now that's your karma, you have the grace.
And then that would bring around another point, is there's no real free grace. It's earned somewhere.
No, grace is free. The rest is an illusion. Karma is an illusion. Grace is self-realization. So stay yourself in the eye. And everything will take care of itself. So that's an important point. Why do we want to get mixed up in so many different teachings? Just follow your own eye and find its source, and everything will come all by itself. We've got to stop thinking so much. We think. How does this work? How does this work? How does this work? Become simple. Do not be too intellectual. The stupider you look, the better.
About a month ago, I was inspired to read Ramana for some poems.
about the same subject with it, and this idea of archer and arrow in the goal, a short poem. I'm trying to understand it. It feels right to me.
And watching it now, you can. Oh, well, what happens is this. Are you sort of like karma?
Well, it's. Well, I get a sense that every moment is where the archer, and it's the goal, it's that moment, as well as the arrow. And it's these three short stanzas, like maybe. I am the arrow speeding along, unconcerned, certain. I am the archer, my aim true, certain. I am the target, awaiting the return, certain.
If it helps you, it's good. That's a good point. If it helps you personally, it's good.
He talks about every moment is its creation.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. As long as it helps you, it's good. You don't complicate yourself. See, the body is going to do whatever it has to do. But you're not your body, so you have nothing to do with it. Therefore, take no concern of anything. And go back to the I and ask yourself, who experiences it? To whom does it come? As an example, when I came back from India in 1985, I was going to retire in a log cabin in Oregon and spend the rest of my life by myself and grow my own food. But instead, I started having a nerve problem. Now, why did that happen? What have I got to do with that? I have nothing to do with it. So the body is now in Los Angeles instead, having meetings. I have no desire to do anything like that. It just happened. And I've got nothing to do with it. Myself is always really happy, just joyous, absolutely happy. That's what I mean. And anything else that you see is your problem.
Well, I see my world.
So here's the meditation that you can practice also. See, these are all tools. Use them if you have to. They work and of course changes. Make yourself comfortable. Close your eyes to all obstructions and take 10 deep breaths from your diaphragm. Inhale through your nose, expand your abdominals. Exhale through your nose and mouth, contract your abdominals in slow motion. 10 deep breaths, slowly, gently. This is to relax you. Now just breathe normally. And now you begin to practice Vipassana meditation for a little bit. When you become aware of your breath and the sensations in your body, just breathe normally. Become aware of your breath and the sensations in your body. Ignore your thoughts. Whenever thoughts come to you, be the observer, the witness. Ignore them.